We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome to our EdWeb Ed Leader webinar today. This is part of an ongoing series that Ripple Effect sponsors focused on supporting student mental health. My name is Jessica Berlinski. I'm going to serve as your moderator today. I also serve as the Director of Pre-K-12 Education for Ripple Effects, our sponsor. If you're not familiar with Ripple Effects, they offer digital programs that support social and emotional wellness, mental and behavioral health for both elementary and secondary, proven effective across tiers. And they are the company behind the award-winning Bouncy Ready to Learn Resilience program for early learners. Today, we're here to talk about the Multi-Tiered System of Support Framework, MTSS. And to give you some sense of how widespread this framework is, MTSS is used across every state and territory. South Carolina actually mandates use of the framework. Most state education agencies support MTSS and offer their districts some level of guidance around implementing MTSS. It's estimated that thousands of districts use the framework, although there is no national level data tracking exactly how many. I found so many definitions for what MTSS is, and I really gravitated to a very simple one. This is from a recent EdWeek piece from October 2023. MTSS is thinking about how do we organize our resources, the academic support and the behavioral, social and emotional, and counseling supports in a school system to make sure that students are getting what they need, right? Today, we have with us a nationally renowned consultant in MTSS, behavioral health expert, and senior research scientist from EDC, the Education Development Center, Dr. Shai Fuchsman. And digging into the practice side, we have the lead director of MTSS for Valdosta City Schools in Georgia, Christy Goff. In the next hour, we really aim to give you concrete steps that you can take and tools you can use to strengthen your MTSS regardless of where you are in your process. And we're also going to address some of the challenges. This is an ongoing system that, as we'll hear, takes years to really perfect. And there are many challenges like implementation, coordination, time, funding. So we aim to have actionable takeaways, again, to go back to your district or school and really better meet the needs of all students. Because the cornerstone of MTSS is equity. So again, meeting each student's needs, each and every student's needs, regardless of what their barriers are and how much they're struggling with those barriers. So let's go into intros here, official intros. Shai and Christy, you've both been in multiple roles in education for many, many years. Let's start with you, Christy. Tell us briefly about your background, your current work in Valdosta, and a little bit about your student population.
Hey, Jessica, thank you. I am a veteran teacher by heart. I have been in Valdosta City Schools for, this is my 26th year. I started here out of college. I've worked mainly with elementary, third, fourth, and fifth grade. For 17 years, I was in the classroom as a regular classroom teacher. And then I moved into the role of intervention specialist, where I worked with the K-5 school, working strictly in the MTSS on the academic and behavior side. And in the past 3 years, I have been at our district level as the MTSS coordinator, where I go into the schools and support our schools in their implementation of that process. Just a little bit about our area. Valdosta has about 56,000 people. We are one of the few towns or cities that we have a city school and a county school system. Our system has about 8,800 students. So we're pretty large. We're the largest classification you can get in Georgia. But that's a little bit about me. So
And in terms of tier one and student makeup, because I know, you know, that is such an important part of really supporting all students. So can you just touch on that?
Well, our district is a Title I district. And so we do have a lot of challenges that we face with students, both academically, behaviorally, that we're trying to reach and help those students reach their goals and be successful.
Thank you, Christy. We're excited to have you here. Shai, your turn. Tell us a little bit about your background, your work with state agencies, as well as with districts currently.
Yeah, so I work for the Education Development Center. We're a nonprofit organization. I'm based in currently IC, Massachusetts, but we do work across the country. And at EDC in general, we conduct research and provide professional development and consultation to districts, local communities, state agencies, and we work with the federal government across a range of topics. My area specifically is in supporting school districts with SEL and mental and behavioral health. My background is in education. I have a master's and a doctorate in education, but I've been working for many years with colleagues in the public health sector. So my work right now is that intersection between education and mental and behavioral health, including bringing that public health perspective and combining it with education. And yeah, as you mentioned, right now we have multiple projects in Massachusetts, in Ohio, and Indiana, where we support school districts through a process of building an MTSS framework. And obviously we'll talk about it more throughout the next hour. But our work is really about translating best practices and research to inform how to best support students' well-being.
Fantastic. Well, and let's stay on you and start with the question of where to start in this work. My guess is that our audience is, you know, at all types of, or all, you know, different stages of the work, some just starting out, some more evolved. What are your recommended starting points?
Yeah, so the first thing I'll say is it's important to understand that MTSS is not a separate intervention or program. This is not about doing something new, but MTSS is really about organizing and coordinating current efforts and also seeing what are the gaps and adding to that. But it's really an organizing process. I have a slide that we can put on the screen that shows how we define MTSS as well as tools that we use in that very first step. So this is how we define MTSS. If you Google MTSS, you'll find all kinds of images that are fairly similar to this. The very basics are those three tiers, tier one programs and practices for all students, and then tier two and tier three are additional supports varying by level of intensity for students who need it. We've also added to this image some of the drivers of effectiveness, which we'll talk about later, including staff competency, leadership, and effective implementation. Where to start, to go back to your original question, the first step is to just recognize that no school district is starting from scratch. Everyone already has some sort of SEL program or practices or maybe mental health supports. So the first step is really to inventory what you currently have, both in terms of supports across all three levels, but also what are the processes and systems that bring all this together. So this is an example of a specific tool that we use in our work. It's a self-reflection rubric. We take all those items for the image before, the tiers, the driver's effectiveness, and for each one, we spell out several different items or concepts to think about. And then what we do is we have school district teams, so teams of about 7 to 10 people. Usually we work with a combination of district-level administrators, school-based administrators, teachers, mental health providers, people who can come back, who can come together and provide a perspective on where they're at. And again, through the self-reflection rubric, the team will go through this and identify what are we doing around MTSS that is working and that is already strong, what's missing, what's not working very well, what do we need to improve? And then based on that, we help them develop, identify specific priorities, and then based on that, develop goals and action steps. So a specific goal might be to add an additional intervention at tier one or tier two, so a new program or a new small group support, or maybe it's something around a system or process. You know, we need more data, or we need a better way of coordinating between the different tiers. Whatever we identify, we then put into an action plan. So I would recommend that is a good first step for anyone thinking about MTSS is doing that inventory of identifying what do you already have, what's missing, and what is needed, again, through that MTSS framework. And if you go to the next slide, I'll just show another similar tool, which is part of this self-assessment, is a tiered support inventory. And this is a very basic, very simple exercise of just going through and listing what are all the ways in which we're supporting students' social, emotional, and mental health well-being at a tier one level for all students. And then what are some of those additional supports we have, the tier two and tier three supports, and just listing them. And as you can see, I know the font is a little bit small, but as you can see, once you list each kind of support, also think which population is benefiting from each kind of support. Who's leading it? Who's in charge of it? What is the current status? Is it being implemented well? Does it need more work? Is it still relevant? And based on that, you can have the conversation, an internal conversation about what are we doing well and what do we need to improve? And again, all this leads to identifying priorities, developing action plans, and then taking steps over time. And again, as Jessica, as you said before, it takes time. So thinking, you know, this year, we're really going to focus on just this one area, adding this one practice. And then we're going to work on the other areas for the next 2 or 3 years. So that's what I would recommend as a first step.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for sharing these images with us, Shai. I kind of twisted your arm to make sure that our audience could see these, because they really, I think, provide, you know, great visuals on what this inventory process might look like. So, Christy, Shai pointed out that there is no like starting place with this necessarily, right? This is a process of organizing. So my question to you, which is where did you start, I think isn't necessarily, right, the greatest question, but tell us kind of maybe where you're at and, you know, if you could look back to a starting point, maybe it was even when you took on this role. What did that look like? And maybe why you started where you did.
One of the things that really drove us to, I guess, dig into what we were doing and what was best for our students was our transient population. As I shared with you earlier privately, but we have over 20% of our students are transient, or the mobility rate, which is higher than our state average. And with 10 schools, it's basically about, I mean, one in five kids across our district is moving around. And so it's hard to get something started and going with students and seeing success when they're bouncing around a lot. And so that's when we, in 2022, we went to more of a district-wide behavior expectations, so that the students wouldn't have to learn a whole new language, so to say, when they moved into a whole new school, because they do move around a lot. It took a lot of time. We had a team, kind of like Shai was saying about having a team. We had a district level team that was representative from each school, administrators and teachers, to develop what we were going to be using and looking at for schools. So that's kind of where we all started, because we were noticing some of those that had the stronger behaviors were the ones that were coming in. And so they didn't know what was expected. So that's kind of what drove us to look at doing something different.
And was there a PBIS model that historically the district had?
We had one. It was, each school was individual. Okay. So we brought it together.
You really wanted that consistency.
As a district collectively, we came up with one like PBIS motto, a set of expectations that we carry no matter elementary, middle, high school, and across any school you went to.
Got it. That makes sense. So Shai, there are a lot of moving parts, right, in doing this effectively. You made reference to those drivers of effectiveness, and I wondered if you could kind of drill down on them each one a little bit and speak to the role of each in making this system as a whole work. Thank you.
Yeah, like I said before, one of the things that we've been doing here at EDC is looking at what do effective models of MTSS look like, and what are some of those key components, those drivers that make MTSS work well as one cohesive system. And as you mentioned, we identified three specific ones, which are on the screen. The first one is staff competency. And the questions around staff competency are, do all staff members, all adults in the building, do they feel comfortable? Do they have the knowledge, the skills to perform their role in MTSS? Obviously, not every staff person has the same role to play. You know, what the teacher does at tier one is going to be different than what the school adjustment counselor does at tier three. But does everyone have the skills to do their role? And do they all understand how the system works and what is their role within the system? And I would break it down further, what we've noticed to these three phases. First is buy-in. Does everyone have, do you have the buy-in from all staff to be part of this system? And then second, once you have the buy-in, do they have the knowledge? Do they understand, for example, SCL, or do they understand mental health? And then third is, once they have the general knowledge, do they have the skills to do the work in school every day? So that's staff competency. Moving to the right, leadership. And around leadership, we talk about leadership vision and commitment. This is a big, complex system. If you go into the school district, you need to have the leadership of the district be committed to this. And I would further define the role of the leader as ensuring effective communication. So how does the leader communicate with not only staff members, but also parents and the community at large about this MTSS framework and how we're going to all work together, even if you don't use the term MTSS because it's too jargony for parents, but how do you talk about this overall effort to support student well-being? And then leaders also need to make sure that they have structures and processes. Again, this all has to work together as one system. So ensuring that the policies are there to make sure that everything is working. The data is being collected, and it's not just being collected, but it's being shared, it's being analyzed, all in ways that make the system work. And then lastly, leaders also need to make sure that the district has the right resources, whatever resources are needed, that they're investing in putting those resources in place. And then lastly, implementation. And obviously, this is true for anything we do in education. If we're going to do evidence-based work, we need to make sure we're implementing it effectively. So that means finding the right interventions across all three tiers, piloting them to make sure they work and they're the right fit for your district. And then once you select the right program or interventions, implementing them effectively, including monitoring implementation, and also putting in place continuous quality improvement processes. So that if you're putting together, or you're putting in place a curriculum, for example, you're constantly improving the way it's being implemented based on feedback from students, based on feedback from teachers. So that falls under implementation. And again, we've identified that those three areas. If you have those in place, that's going to increase the chances that your system is going to work well.
Fantastic. I'm noticing that, Christy, we might have some connectivity issues. Christy, can you still hear us?
Yes, I can still hear you.
Okay, we can't see you, but I can hear you well. I'm gonna go to you with a version of this question, which is around, and I don't know if driver is the best word, but are there or were there specific strategies or tools that have supported your work in your district, helping, your teams meet their goals and ensure efficacy?
Yes, there definitely were. And when we first started this work, we looked at multiple programs out there. One of the ones that we really landed on was the Ripple Effects, because it was a one-stop shop for us. It had a little bit of everything that we needed to support students at tier one, two, and three.
All right. So I'm gonna pop to you, Shai, and we'll go back to Christy with this question. But I'm going to move into data, right? This is a data-driven system. These are data-driven systems. And the aim is to use data at every step of this process to ensure learners are being identified properly, matched with the right supports, and then that those supports, of course, are working and working well. So behavior we can see. So that's arguably a little bit easier to identify than mental health challenges or struggles. But we know our youth are very much in crisis around anxiety, depression, suicidality. I'd love for you to share guidance around, or the guidance maybe that you give to districts around assessing for mental health, including even if there are specific assessments that, you know, you recommend and why.
Yeah, so that's a great point about the importance of really finding all the ways in which we can identify mental health challenges, because they're not always visible. So I would say in general, there are two important systems that are important to put in place. One is, and this is more qualitative data. We'll start with the qualitative data and then move to the quantitative data, which is referrals. And part of it, going back to that staff competency driver, is it making sure that every educator, every adult in the building knows how to identify basic red flags of mental health distress. It doesn't mean that we need to make sure every adult in the building is a psychologist. That's not what we're trying to do. But simply, are there, you know, there's certain red flags that we want adults to be aware of. And when they do see those red flags, to be able to refer to the right person or the right team at the school or the district level, who would be the mental health people who can then collect more data, or who can collect data to really see if there's a mental health issue. And that can be anything from, you know, misbehaviors, but also, you know, students become more disengaged. You know, the football coach might realize that one of their star players is not coming to practice or not playing as hard. That might be a red flag of something happening. Mm. So that's just an example of the referral.
I appreciate that example. I appreciate that example, right? Because, you know, if it's not overt behavior, what are we looking for?
Exactly. Yeah. And so having that training, the professional development, I think is important. And then, but also parents and even students, you know, are there ways for students to self-refer? I've seen schools, especially at the high school level, they'll have QR codes posted on different walls, you know, in the hallways, bathrooms, where students can just click on the QR code or get to the QR code, and that takes them to a self-referal form. So if I need help right now, how do I get my message? Yeah. So that's a first step for making sure that we are able to identify mental health, that anyone is able to identify mental health challenges. And then second, as you mentioned, a really important piece to put in place in MTSS for mental health is our universal mental health screeners. So data, you know, well-established tools that psychologists have developed and tested to test students for mental health issues, including anxiety, depression, trauma. I don't have there are many out there. Some cost money, some are free, some are longer, shorter, different age groups. There really is a variety. Rather than recommend a specific tool, I do have recommendations for two websites that have repositories of tools where you can find those tools.
Fantastic.
Filter. Yeah, so one is called the SHAPE system, and it's the website is really literally HTTPS / theshapesystem.com. And I can put in the chat when Christy talks. And the SHAPE system is part of the National Center for School Mental Health out of the University of Maryland. And they've collected many of these types of universal mental health screening tools and made them available. You do have to register, but it's free. Once you're in the SHAPE system, you can find their library of mental health screening tools. And again, you can filter by age group, by type of mental health issues that you're looking for, and then find the right mental health.
That's fantastic. Thank you for that.
And just very quickly, I'll just mention.
Please.
Yeah. The RAND Corporation has something very similar, and again, I'll put the link in the chat. It's assessments for social, emotional, and academic supports. You can find a lot of different tools there. And one of the things I think both of them do is they also give you the research behind each tool, so that you know that you're really using a well-tested tool.
That's fantastic. Should districts at this, you know, at this point in the crisis that we know is we're very much in the midst of, should universal mental health screeners be, you know, just part of what you're doing in all districts across the board?
Absolutely. That has been recommended by multiple experts in the field. You know, this is the best way to identify mental health challenges and make sure that we are checking in with our students. I will give one warning that, you know, we always give around mental health screening tools is you really want to think through not only are you using the right mental health tool, including one that is culturally responsive to your specific population, but you should really think about the whole mental health screening process, not just the tool, but also are you going to be ready to address the mental health needs that the mental health tool identifies? You know, it doesn't really help to identify many students who are struggling with depression if you're not prepared to address depression. So you really want to think about the whole process, not only how are you going to identify kids, students, but also what are you going to do about it? What are all the different resources, both within your school system, but also in your broader community? Are there certain mental health providers who you can refer to? So you really have a smooth process of identifying and supporting those students who need the support.
I appreciate that. And we'll just go back to you a beat. One of the things you were, you had mentioned is one of the tools that you use across tiers, right? So at each tier, and I was going to kind of follow up, if you could mention that again, because I think we just lost you as you were talking about that. And then maybe if you would, what about that specific tool makes it, you know, uniquely helpful, or, you know, are there any unique affordances that you've found helpful to your work? I mean, there's a lot of programs out there. So I'm just wondering if you can share, you know, any specifics around, you know, your needs, this tool, and what specifically was helpful to your teams?
So the thing that was probably the most helpful was that it you could tailor it for the different tiers.
And this is the Ripple Effects program?
Yes, okay. The Ripple Effects Kids and Teens program. Because you could use it like as a tier one SEL curriculum for everybody as like whole group, morning meetings, during advisement, things like that for all students. It was easy to make a pacing guide within our district going through what our needs were. We even gave schools and teachers, they have like flex weeks where depending on what's going on in their school, they can go back and find topics and issues that they're dealing with and go back and work on those. So that made it really easy. It was, I mean, it's all in one place. So that makes it, teachers have so much on their plate right now, and to ask them to go here to find something and over here to get something, having it all in one place just made it very convenient, easy, and just very accessible. And then when you moved up into tier two, we have where our counselors, or even when students are disciplined, part of their corrective action is working in those modules independently, in small groups, with the counselors. And then when you move up into tier three with an increased intensity or time, then you're looking at being very specific of exactly what does this student need, and then going and using those modules to help them gain those skills that they need to deal with different things that they're facing.
So it sounds like there's almost a degree of customizability here. Is that
very customizable? And I love that it gives you the gives the student the privacy they need. So if there are topics that they're not ready to talk about, they can still look up those topics on their own. And so that was a great way, because they may not be ready to talk to somebody about it, but it's something that's going through their mind, or maybe it's something they've heard and they want to know more about.
And so this is a good segue. I don't know if you were with us when Shai was talking a little bit about mental health, and the need to assess around mental health. So I know that when we spoke, there was some data within this tool that your teams were finding very insightful. Can you share a little bit about that?
So you're referring to that aggregate report, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yes. That was, and I was actually sharing that yesterday with all our principals, looking at that, because that personal sensitive topics that they may not be ready to talk to someone about, but it gives them that privacy to know that it's not going to come up on a report. But then on that report, it does give you hot topics in your school. And I was just reading through some of those topics: abandon, verbal abuse, birth order, friend problems. And so, and it gives you an idea how many times it's been accessed. It gives you a number of how many times that topic's been accessed at your school. And so counselors, social workers can use that information to say, hey, maybe we need to offer groups for these topics because it's being hit on 20 something times in our school. So obviously it's something that we need to dig into and deal with and help these students.
And so just for clarity here, for those that may not be familiar with this, the idea is, and tell me if I'm wrong here, Christy, that you can provide young people some level of privacy around choosing lessons around personal challenges or sensitive issues. And individually, you're not going to see where they go. But in the aggregate, for let's say a whole school site or a whole group, you could see what were some of the trending issues. Do I have that right?
That's correct. Like, you're not going to know the name of a student who's accessed it, but you'll see, okay, this is a pretty hot topic in my school. And you'll see how many times it's been accessed. So you can use that to gauge, maybe we need to offer some things in this area. Maybe something's going on that we didn't even realize as the administrators is going on in our buildings.
Yeah, I love that. And it kind of, I think, it makes me think of that QR code, right, that you mentioned, Shai, because kids are not always, you know, they do not have the skills, right, and the agency, oftentimes adults don't, to ask for help, to know who to know how to ask for it. So providing these different mechanisms where kids on their own, right, we can give them tools and mechanisms to ask for help that are easy and that they still feel a little sense of agency, but at the same time, privacy to some degree. So moving on to challenges. There are lots of challenges with this system because it is a big system and there are so many moving parts. That same EdWeek piece that I cited at the opening of the hour, it referred to implementation, of course, being a Christy, all right. Wonderful to see you and have you officially back. So it cited implementation and time, of course. When is time not a challenge for educators? And this was the quote that I pulled. Schools often don't have the resources and time to allow for the personalized instruction that tiers 2 and 3 require. And then, of course, there's that planning time. So Shai, guidance. Can you share any guidance around building in or creating or finding time, both for the personalized instruction, but then also at that systems level for all the planning that needs to happen, you know, the time to assess, to ensure that continuous improvement is there?
Yeah, I mean, the first piece of advice is recognizing the lack of time for planning. Is this is going to take time. You know, going back to the first part of today's webinar where I talked about taking the time to inventory what you need to strengthen your system, make sure you develop an action plan that is realistic and manageable. You're not going to be able to do everything the first year. You're going to have to, you know, make a list of these are all the things we need to do this year. Let's start with item number one and give ourselves the time to really do things right. And invest the time up front in planning. The better plan you have for MTSS, the less time you'll need in the implementation side. So upfront time, whether it could be sometime over the summer or, you know, just across multiple months throughout the year of planning, so that you're beginning the implementation or strengthening the implementation of MTSS later the following school year is one way of doing it. The other advice around the lack of time is, in one word, integration. The more you can integrate SEL and even mental health supports into everyday school, into the classroom time, the less time you need. So at the tier one level, we talk about building students' social emotional competencies, including some of the things, Jessica, you were just saying about that sense of agency, empowering children to understand what they're going through, what they're feeling, and asking for help when they need it. That is something that we can talk about in the classroom, whether it's, during English language arts, you read a book about a character and kind of incorporating those questions and those conversations into the conversation about the book. Or it could be, when students are struggling with math, talking about growth mindset, why are you struggling with this math problem? Are there ways I can help you think about how to grapple with it so you don't feel like, you're failing when you get the math problem wrong? So it's those everyday conversations, everyday messages, practices, welcoming students every day into the classroom in a personalized way. It just takes a few minutes, but it makes a huge difference. As opposed to finding the time in the curriculum to have 45 minutes to teach SEL skills. So integration, I think, is important. And I would even say even the mental health supports, helping teachers, and I know we ask a lot of teachers, we don't give them enough credit for all that they do, but helping teachers also have practices for supporting students who are struggling. So in the moment, supports, having quiet corners in the classroom. Mm. So a student is dysregulated, how do we let them have that moment to calm, to self-soothe, or helping them develop self-soothing practices, helping them develop mindfulness meditation practices, so that we're really helping them develop self-soothing skills. And again, try and incorporate as much as you can throughout the day, not try to do it all at once, but spreading all these lessons and practices throughout the year, I think is a way to address the lack of time.
I so appreciate that. And I know, Christy, one of the things that you had mentioned was with the tool that you use, and I'm going to get to one of the challenges here in a moment. We're going to go to Shai, who's going to help us maybe or help you navigate that challenge. But I just wanted to touch on that idea that you've shared several times about a light lift, that one of the reasons that you had, moved forward with Ripple Effects was that you felt that it was easy. And so it kind of, saved time, took off that like, oh my God, I have so many things on my plate, like as you implemented it. I don't know if you could speak to that briefly.
I mean, it really is a light lift. I mean, everything is in one place. When the teachers log in, they go into their module. Typically their PBIS coach or counselor has set up what lessons they want the school to work on that week. They go into it, and there's the different aspects, the different parts of it, and they may take one topic and work on it throughout the whole week. They may have the students do some of it where they're almost leading it, and the teacher is being more of a facilitator or moderator. I've walked into classrooms, they're doing talk and turn, so they're pulling in that oral language piece, so they're integrating the ELA side of that. It's all right there. There's no books, there's no manuals, there's no going here to grab something, making copies. Mm. It's all right there inside the platform.
Yeah, and there's such a wonderful photo that I've seen before, and we don't have it to share with everyone, but of I think a second grader, right? Like leading her class in a lesson, which is such a great image. And that, again, going back to agency, like that's what we want. We want kids to own this learning, right? So challenges, Christy, you shared with me, and I'm one of your MTSS challenges around, you share it, but if you would, around kids getting to school on time, right?
Yeah. That homeroom time is where teachers are typically getting this SEL in. And then you have the students that are coming in late. They may show up an hour late. They may show up 15 minutes late, or just attendance, or even with that transient issue you're constantly dealing with new kids coming in, kids leaving, but that getting to school on time. And a lot of times those are the students that need the support more. So how can we combat that?
Shy, we need your guidance.
Well, the first thing I'll say, I always say whenever, you know, I give advice is, I bring a lot of humility to this work. A lot of advice is always easier said than done. So just want to preface what I'm about to say with that. So a couple of things. First of all, I think that it will be interesting to better understand what is the issue, what are the issues around students coming in late. Because like, as you said, sometimes it's the students who need it the most who are also the ones who are coming late. So engaging students, engaging families, is it just traffic or is there a mental health issue? Is there trauma? Is there, you know, another concept that we haven't talked about much today yet is sense of belonging. How do we create a sense of belonging in the school so that every student feels like they're welcomed and supported? Is that an issue? You know, students not feeling that sense of belonging and therefore being concerned about going to school. So just really taking the time to identify what are the challenges students have. I think someone mentioned too in the chat about absenteeism. I know in Massachusetts, and I'm sure in many other states, that's an increasing issue. So same thing, taking the time to better understand what are the barriers, what are the issues around absenteeism, lateness, et cetera. So that's first of all. And obviously, if you can address that, then the rest of the problem goes away. But assuming you still have the problem in the short term while students are late, I'll give the same answer I just gave before, which is integrating SCL throughout the day. If you have all the SCL work, kind of all the eggs in one basket, and it happens to be the very first hour of the day, and that's when they're late, then obviously they're going to miss it. But if you're really incorporating SCL throughout the day, and it's not just SCL, it's mental health promotion, which obviously are intersect a lot, sense of belonging, positive school culture. If you can build all of that throughout the day, those students will be getting some sort of support and building those skills over time throughout the day and hopefully benefiting, even if they're late. And then the last thing I'll say, because in your description of the challenge, you said sometimes it's the students who need it the most. In MTSS language, that could mean tier two and tier three supports. So sometimes the students who need most need something more than just what they're getting the school day. And so again, identifying what are the unique challenges of those students who need the support the most, why do they need it the most, how can we support them, and I know this is easier said than done, trying to customize tier two and tier three supports around their schedules. So for example, are these students more available after school? Can we have an after school small group support? You know, lunch, you know, I love a program in my child's school, Lunch Bunch, and other schools have it too, program for kids who are struggling socially. So once a week, they work with a counselor in the cafeteria to develop social skills. Lunch Bunch is just an example. If social skills is not the issue, you can still use a lunch period as a way to implement those tier two supports. So that's another solution. You know, and again, these solutions might also address the lateness issue, if the lateness issue is in fact social, emotional, mental health related.
Thank you, Shai. I so appreciate that. And I hope that was helpful or at least planted some seeds, Christy, for you. So I do have one eye on the clock here. And one really important again, kind of cornerstone of this work is equity. How do we ensure that our systems are equitable? You know, we're all human. These systems are created and held up by people. And people, of course, have biases, both conscious and unconscious. So, you know, I want to understand, you know, how do we make sure that those biases are not in play? And before, you know, I go to you both with this question, I also want to call out myself here because, you know, we have an all-white panel here. And, you know, I work with an extraordinary groups of you know, African-American and Latinx ed leaders. And honestly, that voice is really important you know, even as we talk amongst ourselves in a panel like this. And, you know, for logistic reasons, I wasn't able to bring in some of my favorites. But I really want to acknowledge that, because I think that that voice and that lens in every setting needs to be present. So with that, maybe Shai, how do you, in your work, in your guidance, you know, address biases, address that?
Well, first of all, in our work, I showed before the self-reflection rubric. What I forgot to mention is for each item, we actually have the equity consideration. So when you're building the team, that's one item on the self-reflection. What is the equity consideration? Do you have all the right voices around the table? When you're thinking about tier one or tier two, what are the equity considerations? Data. Are the data tools developed for all populations, or do they have any biases themselves? And also, who's around to interpret the data? Because sometimes having multiple perspectives can help. I also want to, if we have time, I wanted to share a couple of quick slides that I think illustrate how we think about equity in the context of MTSS. There is a famous image that I'm sure many people have seen that defines equity. It's right here. So it compares equality, equity, and justice. Equality, as you see, you know, different students have different heights, which represents different abilities. Equality, if we give everyone the same thing, they're not going to all benefit the same way. In equity, one definition of equity that I've heard is equity is when we give each student what they need. And MTSS really is designed to give each student what they need. And I think that image of each student having the right number of boxes below them to help them see over the fence is a one way of thinking about MTSS. The third image is also very helpful to think about, which is, well, what if we just remove the barrier? If we remove the barrier, then everyone has the same access. But I want to show another images that push this idea further, because in these images, in all these images, students have different heights representing different abilities, but the same barrier.
Did I do that too fast, Shai?
No, that's fine. That's good. We can go to the next one. The reality oftentimes looks like this, where in this image, all three students have the same height. They have the same abilities. The difference is they're not facing the same barriers. The girl on the left has the biggest barrier, the most amount of barrier in this symbolically being able to see the field, whereas the one further to the right practically has no barrier, can see the whole field without any barrier. It is important, and I bring this up in the context of MTSS specifically, because sometimes we think about, well, if someone faces more barriers, we're just going to give them more tier two and tier three supports, which is the next slide. This is one way I think we both moved the same time. So some people think about MTSS, we're just going to give more tier two or more tier three supports, but that's not really the equitable way. In this case, you don't really have a tier two or tier three issue. What you have is a tier one issue, which is you don't have an equal playing field. And again, the solution is to remove the barrier, to get a situation where you don't need additional tier two or tier three supports because you remove the barrier in the tier one. Now, to translate this to be more practical, if you are seeing, you know, one of the important things about equity is looking at data. If you're seeing your data that you have a disproportionate number of students of color or LGBTQ students who are being referred to mental behavioral needs, maybe you don't have a tier two or tier three problem. Maybe you have a tier one problem that your school culture is not equally welcoming of all students, or is equally supporting all students, in which case it's not about supporting the individual students. It's about thinking about your school culture, which translates in this image to removing the barrier. One of the things, Jessica, you and I talked about as a specific example of that is addressing teacher implicit bias. Maybe that's the reason why you have this disproportionate number of students needing tier two or tier three, is just because of teacher bias. And so doing implicit bias training, we all have biases. It's not a bad thing to have biases in some situations, depending on the situation and the context. But helping recognize those biases and address the ones that are negatively impacting students, that's one way of removing the barrier as a way to address equity.
Appreciate that. I want to, anything on this, Christy, I'm going to go to some of our audience questions as we're, again, nearing the end of the hour, but I wanted to give you just an opportunity to kind of weigh in on that, on the equity.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that is, it's, we've got to remove those barriers. That's, I mean, the goal, because MTSS is not designed for students to be there forever.
Mm.
Just continually give more and more support. We've got to find a way to remove those barriers to give them success.
Well, one of the, thank you. One of the barriers for school districts and certainly administrators, educators, is funding, always. And so that is one of our questions here. I would love to, and I know as we, you know, we're at the top of 2024 and ESSER funding, which we've had kind of the luxury and in many districts, you know, ample funds to do this work, that funding is going to be evaporating. And so, you know, looking ahead, how advice for districts, how are, you know, either of you can take this, but, you know, what happens when we need supports, but the funds are not there? Or advice maybe shy around how to plan forward at the top of this year. And Christy, too, I'd love for you to weigh in on this.
That's a question I have myself. So,
and right, I wish
shy.
I had
figure out today, right? You've got a heavy lift here, Shy, with a lot of challenges.
Yeah, and I wish I had all the answers, especially funding is one that I don't always have the answers for. But there's a couple of steps that what we can take, the districts can take. Number one is before the funding dries out, and I know it's drying out very quickly, is to invest as much of the funding now, long term. So, you know, to the extent that you still have funding to purchase curricula, to purchase, you know, SEL assessments or mental health screeners, to provide trainings to your teachers, you know, what are those investments you can make now with the money you have now that will last beyond just the lifetime of the funding? That's number one. And number two is to really take the time to budget out. What do you actually need? You know, once you have an MTSS structure that is working for you, this is part of what we talk about under sustainability. Once you have the right structure, you want to think about sustaining it. And there's that financial sustainability piece. In order to do that, you really want to cost out, what does it take to maintain our MTSS structure, to maintain, you know, the different supports across all tiers, to maintain the data systems. What is that true cost? And then obviously fundraising, whether it's going to your school board, whether it's going to the state agencies, federal funding streams. I'm hopeful that the federal government will be aware that even though COVID is way behind us or feels behind us, that the needs, first of all, their mental health needs existed before COVID, but certainly post-COVID, the needs are still there, especially mental health needs. So I'm hopeful that additional funding will be made available.
And is there, I know you touched on mental health being, you know, this being kind of more in the mental health kind of framing or language now that we can be looking out for funding streams tied to that as we move forward. Is that an anticipation of yours?
From the federal government, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. I wish I could, you know, tell the future and especially try to figure out what the federal government will do. But, you know, I know for a fact there's a Stronger Connections grant. It's a relatively new grant that came out of a bipartisan bill to address gun violence. It was originally focused on violence and it still has elements to it. But there's definitely some language there on mental health and social emotional learning. That's a grant that the federal government is giving or has given to state education agencies to then distribute to districts. So each state is distributing that funding differently. But if you Google your state education agency and Stronger Connections grant, you might be able to find what your state is doing with that funding if you don't already know.
And say that's the name again. Can you just say the name again of that?
Yeah, Stronger Connections grant.
Okay.
And again, that's just one example of something that is currently out there, and hopefully there'll be more.
Fantastic. So I want to go to this question, and I have to admit, I can hazard a guess as to what this means, but I'm not even fully sure I understand this. But I want to address it. We are seeing an increase in school refusal. How can we intervene? Christy, I don't know, maybe you can help us. Is that kids or families just simply refusing to come to school?
I feel like that may be like teacher buy-in to seeing the importance of this, that I was hired to teach, so I shouldn't have to be doing this. But if we can address these issues and help the students with how they're feeling and what's going on, we will have more time to teach. That's kind of how I see that question.
A lot of questions. Thank you, Christy. A lot of questions on mental health screenings here. And one of them, is there an age that is best to identify students' mental health needs? You know, when should we be maybe starting those universal mental health screeners? Or screening?
Mental health needs can come up at any age. The kind of assessment you use or the screening tool you use will obviously need to be age appropriate. So for example, especially early elementary school grades, there are teacher rating tools. So you're not asking students to fill out a survey, but instead you're asking teachers to make specific observations using very specific assessments. And also engaging parents. So parents and teachers can both be the eyes that identify mental health needs early on. As students get older, as you're teaching them about mental health in as a tier one approach, and you're using self-reporting, mental health screening tools, then obviously they can indicate their needs on their own. But there is no specific age. You know, any age is important to screen.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of using the right age-appropriate tool.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, there's a bunch of questions on that. And of course, there's at every age, we have these challenges at every age. And lastly, and we're right at the hour here, parents, there's a question here about parents. Can parents request mental health supports as part of a child's IEP? What would some examples of supportive modifications be? I think, you know, that parent piece, we didn't, I think you mentioned it a little bit, you both touched on it, but that parent piece, do either of you want to, maybe we'll close with that question.
I can jump in. I definitely think engaging parents is important. As I mentioned before, one way, you know, having a referral system for parents might be helpful. So, for example, on the website, having a button, you know, that goes to a form. The IEP is governed by special education law, and it's for specific disabilities. And mental health doesn't always fall into the IEP world, depending on whether it's related to a specific disability. But even outside an IEP, you want to make sure that you're engaging parents by letting them know what to look for and how to support your child's positive mental health, but also to let them know how you can, who you should talk to in the school, and how you can talk to someone in the school when you are concerned about your child's mental health.
That's great. Well, I want to thank both of you, Dr. Fuchsman, Christy, for your time and service, sharing your experience and insights today. I want to thank everyone, especially who joined us today. You know, we talked today about big systems, and these systems do, of course, need to work to support our students. But our research also tells us that with one caring adult, one consistent caring adult in our young people's lives, and even young people who are really struggling with a number of adverse experiences, those students can thrive. And so I know a lot of the folks on this webinar today are doing that big work, but I also know that a lot of you are that one person that may be making an absolute difference in your students' lives. So I want to thank you for that. And again, thank you, Shai, and thank you, Christy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.